Welcome, all our friends. So the second session of Ascending Masses of Light, Level 2, Session 2, and of course the date is March 26, 2023. Got that right. We have prepared ourselves for this session and are seated in our seats in our Light Temple Crucible. Today is a continuation of our group presentation. So, because of that, I'm going to turn things over to Miss Joan and Miss Milena, and here they are.
Well, hello.
Hi, everyone.
I'm happy that everybody has joined us today. Milena?
Hi, everybody. We are happy to be back. Okay, so today is a continuation of our opening segment, part two. And as we ended last week, we said this past week, consider it an intermission. So be aware of yourselves within our beautiful light temple. The energetics are still all in place for today's group's presentation. So everyone take a breath. Those of us in the gallery, let's once again open ourselves to be in receptive mode for today. And again, visualize yourself sitting within our crucible as the receivers of the transmissions and as the presenters of the transmissions. Breathe in the beautiful coherence within this magnificent chamber. Take one more in breath. Exhale. And I will turn this over now to Deanna and group two.
Oh, blessings, everyone. It is truly an honor, and it has been a most humbled experience to work with such beautiful, beautiful souls. I am truly grateful that I had the honor to work with them. And so on that note, share my screen, and I would like for Pat and Andy to start with the introduction of their group, and then Kathleen, and then Rosemary, and I will go last. So, Pat and Andy?
Thank you, Deanna. The beautiful members of our group that we have had the honor and privilege of working with are Kathy Mann, Brother John Carroll, Martha Meadows, Jenna Stewart, Donna Hagens, and Catherine Keach.
Kathleen?
For my lovely group is Ginger Chambers, Ruth Stout, Beth Goodson, Sharon Zier, Marianne Bordeaux, and Swale Coco. Thank you.
And my group includes the beautiful Sharka Glett, Jody Robinson, Kelly Barnett, Christiana Noel, who is with us in spirit during our preparations, and Becky Cochran.
And my group, we have Imhotep, Jutatip, Marianne, Heidi, Colleen, Vera, and James, who also was with us in spirit. I would like to start off by saying that this presentation, the inspiration for this presentation is from one of Cryon's book written by Lee Carroll, entitled The Journey Home. And I thought it was so fitting with these beautiful photos by Beth Goodson, how it's a good representation of this journey home, but I have named it our return journey home. So sit back and enjoy. Ella pulls up her chair to her computer, excited about the first class of the year. Her fingers anxiously type out all the URLs to get to her email and click the link for the Zoom call. She has been waiting 4 months for this moment, her mind racing as to what the council will bring forth for the opening transmission. As she settles in her chair, she begins to go inward, taking deep breaths and focusing into her sacred heart. It wasn't long before this tranquil, almost viscous flow of peace and ease begins to fill every cell in her body. With each breath, Ella travels deeper and deeper into this warm and safe space. As if floating on a whisper, she hears, "We see your heart. It is filled with pure intent. We know the power of your desire to be an ascended master, and we are very pleased. There are some core understandings, truths, that you must know before you can open the door to your heart's desire. Are you willing to take the journey to not only discover, but embody these truths?" Ella feels this powerful energy come from her heart, but silently verbalizes a gentle, "Yes." The voice continues, "Are you willing to do whatever it takes to gain access to these truths?" Again, with the powerful energy from her heart, Ella says, "Yes." The voice ends the communication saying, "Blessings to your journey home." Ella opens her eyes. Instead of seeing her computer screen, she finds herself sitting outside in a place unknown to her. The sky is clear. There's a vibration in the aqua color that seems to surround her. In front of her, there's a row of neatly manicured bushes extending infinitely to the right and left. In the middle, a translucent gate shimmering in the sunlight. Although she feels she should question where she is, she doesn't. There is a knowing deep in her heart that this is somewhere familiar. She hears in her mind, "Walk through the gate." As Ella walks through the gate, she only travels a few feet when a clearing suddenly appears. She looks around to see smaller trees with brightly colored leaves, colors she has never seen before. "Hello." She turns to her right and notices three other people sitting on this illuminated bench. Ella looks at the three people and suddenly realizes that these are three people from her ascension group. "How did they get here?" she says in her mind. She walks over to them and sits down. All four begin to tell the story of how they arrived in this place. They all acknowledge that they were quietly focused in their sacred heart when they found themselves sitting outside the gate. Then Ella begins to feel that warm and peaceful feeling again throughout her body. She looks over to the others, and she could tell from their faces they are probably feeling the same. Her eyes gently close. She hears a whisper that floats through her entire brain. We see your heart. It is filled with pure intent. We know the power of your desire to be an ascended master, and we are very pleased. There are some core understandings, truths, that you must know before you can open the door to your heart's desire. Are you willing to take the journey to not only discover, but embody these truths? Ella feels this powerful energy come from her heart, but silently verbalizes a gentle yes. The voice continues. Are you willing to do whatever it takes to gain access to these truths? Again, with the powerful energy from her heart, Ella says yes. The voice ends the communication saying, now your return journey truly begins. As they all are feeling that very tangible feeling of peace and warmth, two doors instantly appear before them, in front of them. They stand up quickly, look at each other, and then without thought, shuffle themselves so that Ella is standing next to Esase, and Ula is standing next to Uesa. The door to the left has shimmering gold symbols. The door to the right also has shimmering gold symbols, but are different. Again, without thought, Ella and Esase move in front of the door to the left, and Ula and Uesa move in front of the door to the right. Ella speaks out loud as if in a trance. Now and now our journey truly begins. Blessings. Ella and Esase simultaneously walk through the towering door. Instantly, they are transported to a realm filled with a bright crystalline white, unknown to either of them. Trying to adjust their eyes to the brightness, there appears a spherical object. They look up to see the enormity of this structure, as if it holds up the whiteness around them. They also see the sphere looks crystalline in appearance, with small facets that appear and disappear, almost like they are flashing some sort of code. An opening manifests in front of them. They walk through. Floating in the air, they read a banner that says, "Welcome to the School of Divine Design." As Esase and Ella look around, they immediately notice that the opening has disappeared, and they seem to be standing in the middle of rows and rows of hallways spreading outward in numerous directions, too numerous to count. As they continue to look around, suddenly a figure appears in one of the hallways. "Hello, beloveds. We have been expecting you. Please follow me." Ella and Esase follow the figure past several doorways, some with symbols, others emanating frequencies that resonate in their bodies. The figure turns to the right and stops at the door that has quantum singularity written on it in shimmering white letters. The figure beckons them to enter. They enter into a circular room with two translucent chairs and a projection screen in front of them. The figure telepathically asks them to sit down. To their surprise, Ella and Esase see members of their community magically appear in front of them. Andy is the first to step forward to speak.
"Greetings, masters. What is a singularity in scientific terms? To understand the concept of a singularity is, imagine the force of gravity is extraordinary and this force is compressing you down into an infinitely tiny point so that you occupy no volume. That sounds impossible, and it is. Classical Newtonian physics does not handle physics at very small distances. For this, you need to add quantum physics into your model to allow for a description of the quantum effects. This led to the development of Einstein's theory of general relativity, which resulted in the first theoretical existence of singularities or black holes. The key word here is theoretical, as it remains a mystery as to what these objects would look like. Further development of the theory of general relativity led to the concept that the initial state of the universe was a singularity at the time of the Big Bang. So there are basically two types of singularities, according to Stephen Hawking. Singularities either occur entirely in the future, which would be a black hole singularity, or entirely in the past, which would be a Big Bang singularity. However, these types of singularities aren't represented physically. They are mathematical. Black hole singularities are created after the core of a very massive star collapses beyond its event horizon. Black hole singularities are considered to be infinitesimally small, but they possess infinite density. Black hole singularities are known to exist throughout the known galaxies, so therefore, they do not contain all of the matter and energy in the universe. And black hole singularities are always in the future. If you go near one, your time comes to an end. Whereas Big Bang singularities, there was only one, and as such, it contained all of the matter and energy in the universe. The Big Bang singularity created space, time, and all of the matter and energy that we know today. And Big Bang singularities always lie in the past. If you were to rewind time, galaxies would become closer together and eventually coming together at a single point. So in scientific terms, a gravitational singularity is also referred to as a space-time singularity, which means it is a location where the gravitational quantities can become infinite. However, a quantum singularity is a science fiction term that can mean whatever the writer wants it to mean because it sounds very sophisticated. Quantum singularities were a big deal throughout the many seasons of Star Trek, which was often ahead of its time. Quantum singularities referred to a point or region in the space-time continuum where normal physical models did not apply and extraordinary amounts of gravitational forces were present. So in Star Trek terms, a quantum singularity actually resembles what is really a gravitational singularity or a massive localized distortion of space and time. So what does all this mean? It means that singularities divide the universe into two worlds, a world where everything moves slower than the speed of light and a world where everything moves faster than the speed of light. It means that a singularity is an extremely dense region of the space-time continuum, which produces extremely powerful gravitational forces that are not measurable. It means that a quantum singularity is a point at which all physical laws are indistinguishable from one another and suggest areas where the laws of physics could cease to exist. It means that a singularity in physics is a point that has an infinite value, and since an infinite quantity cannot occur in our understanding of nature, many scientists do not consider them real. A one-liner that I enjoy is that if you can't explain it simply, you simply do not understand it enough. And now we will hear from Pat.
Greetings, dear masters. Andy's scientific discussion of quantum singularity identifies gaps and unknown explanations yet to be determined in understanding quantum singularity. I will present the voices of our dear group members using snippets of their thoughts from their own written presentations. Brother John speaks of the elegance of mathematics to bring light to the unknown explanations of quantum singularity by science. perhaps not traditional mathematics by theoretical physicists, but mathematics as seen within holograms and attention points that we can see deep within ourselves. He further states that quantum singularity can increase our understanding with a collective, such as our crucible, Temple of Light. Martin Meadow discusses an interpretation of quantum singularity using the parable of the 9 blind men in a room with an elephant. Each man is only able to identify the thing they touch in terms of their limited visual perception, while none of them actually describe this thing as an elephant based on this limited perception. Marcia suggests that looking at the elephant from a higher level, in other words, higher consciousness, with open eyes, open hearts, we would see an elephant and perhaps even a herd of elephants representing attention points. Catherine Keach draws from our PowerPoint story of the spiritual group members. Catherine feels they are guided by the intentions in their hearts to take this journey using the available energies around them to become ascended masters. She proposes that the group draws lights from their chakras that could also be quantum singularity. When they finish their journey, their creations, she says, may melt back into the energetic field. Kathy Mann mentions that current science omits metaphysical science, scientists, and theorists such as Nassim Harriman, Bruce Lipton, and Greg Braden's work, that they speculate the gaps within science to understand such a concept as quantum singularity can be explained by simply going deep within. Kathy quite simply and insightfully tells us the quantum and its singularities are within each of us in the middle of our torus, and we can access that through meditation. Janice Stewart tells us we are the living, breathing, conscious states of singularity and quantum's collective unity embodied simultaneously. And as creator gods, we express our divinity nature in all of our within and without activities, always both being the she now and becoming the she at vaster creative cosmic levels through source's first ray. And myself, Pat, I am grateful for the insights of our group as they strive to understand quantum singularity at a very deeper spiritual level through study, meditation, and listening to their own wise inner guidance. I too believe quantum singularity is found within us as we quiet ourselves, listen, meditate, and observe attention points and holograms. Interestingly enough, biographies such as Albert Einstein tell us that as a very young man, he quieted himself and visualized many of his theories, which does sound a lot like meditation. These theories are still being proven by physicists today, suggesting current science and spirituality can weave together. I would add that I too believe quantum singularity is found within us as we quiet ourselves, listen, meditate, observe, with open hearts and minds. Let's trust ourselves now that we are masters and the way showers leading the way. And let's begin this process with meditation led by Sharon.
Thank you, Pat and Andy. So I asked in meditation to be taught about quantum singularity, and this is what I was shown. My vision began with a night sky full of stars. Some of the stars were shimmering and large. Some were small and dim. I reached for a large shimmering star and put it to my mouth to taste it. It was like biting into the most sweet, delicious, juiciest apple I've ever had. I then brought a small and dim star to my mouth, and it was like taking a bite out of an apricot. Nice and worth the taste, but definitely not as sweet as the larger star that tasted like an apple. I heard, all experiences are valid and worthy of a taste. My view was then taken from the night sky to the ground, where I saw a white stucco-like wall about 5 or 6 feet high and about 2 feet thick. At the top and middle of the wall was a large circular opening integrated into the wall. I watched as a child, about 5 or 6 years old, but with an undeniable wisdom, crawled up two large blocks or boxes to reach the circular opening in the wall. This child crawled into the circular opening and lounged back, relaxing, with its back supported by the wall, left leg bent on the wall, and the right leg freely dangling off the edge. My sense was this was my soul. This wise, observing child was there to witness the event that was about to occur. The scene pulled back, and I observed myself from behind as light lines began coming into my heart chakra. There were many, many light lines of every color, some shimmering gold and white, some green, some gray, but all were very focused, and with an increasing intensity and speed, they gathered into a single black point in my heart chakra. It's here I just want to remind everyone of what we've been taught about blackness in a vision. To me, when I see blackness in a vision, I interpret it as endless potential, rich with endless creative potential and the promise of that which is yet to be created. Much like the black night sky at the beginning of the meditation, the black sky was endless and full of creative potential and an exciting energy that was palpable. Now, as I watched the focused lines of light as they gathered into a single black point in my heart chakra, I was then pulled by a force into the body I was observing, and I could feel all the lines behind me speeding to the center. The lines behind me felt like past lives. The lines to the side coming to my center felt like parallel lines, lives, and the lines in front of me coming into my center seemed like future lives or future potentials. The force pulling them into my center increased dramatically until all were in my heart chakra. Then a single black point exploded out in every direction into a golden white shimmering light. I felt an ecstatic joy and a sense of completion. This sense of completion, for this aspect of creation anyway, lasted for about 30 seconds. Next, I felt a golden spiral come up from the ground and spiral through my central column, up through my crown, about 8 to 10 feet. I looked up, and through the circle in the wall was the child, observing, with no reaction, just witnessing the event. Lastly, I looked up through the circle in the wall and up to the night sky, where there was now a golden keyhole. A keyhole opening, which was radiating a beautiful golden white shimmering light. I knew when looking at this radiating keyhole that it was symbolizing the next stage in our process of ascension, a whole new challenge of co-creating with Source, which I sensed goes on and on into infinity. I was reminded of an expert from Awakening Osiris, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, which reminds us, you will never reach the end of your own becoming, the madness of creation, the joy of existence. dance in the moment, reach down and pull up song. We were gods then and we knew it. We are gods now, dancing like stars in the night, radiating everywhere, complete. This is the day without end, the passage into light itself. Go and make of the world something beautiful. Set up the light in the darkness. Remembering this knowing of our journey home, I heard amen and amen. It is now my pleasure to pass the light on to beautiful Beth Goodson.
Thank you so much, Sharon. That was lovely. It really gave us the inspiration that you were feeling. And as we all enter into our meditative process, channeling, whatever it may be, that puts us in absolute certainty with the light. In our group, I would just like to distill some of the essence of what we were talking about. Quantum singularity. Quantum singularity leads us to understand that through our own self-realization and creation of our light body, our capacity to follow the master teachings and move through space and time with the right intention and attention, we can change the reality of the cosmos to fall into alignment with Creator of all that is. So as we focus on those important words, I would like to pass this light on to Kathy Bradley, who helped us lead us through all of this work that we performed together, to tell us how do we get this information to the group at large.
Beautiful. Thank you, Beth. So why is quantum singularity important to the group? A quantum singularity is used in Star Trek to refer to a point or region in the space continuum where normal physics models do not apply. In effect, the singularity divides the universe into two, a world where everything moves slower than the speed of light, and a world where everything moves faster. The law of physics in these two realms could not turn out to be quite different. I would like to share a quote with you from the Galela Collective. You can think of timelines as wonderful, beautiful bubbles existing in the cosmos. Every single timeline that you could ever possibly think of, dream of, create, exists in the multidimensionality of yourself as source. In keeping with this, I want to share about an image I received while in meditation with my beloved soul sisters. I was shown an image of a boat. We were to maintain an equilibrium and to continually keep our eye on the horizon. We were being magnetically drawn to the horizon as we kept our attention point upon it. We were to create heaven on earth. Shambhala. We were doing this in the midst of the dismantling of the old and creating the new. With this divergence that was taking place, it was of the utmost importance that we play our roles as the masters of light. As people began to notice us, they saw a way out of the chaos and the noise. We were embodied masters, setting a clear example for others to emulate. As we continued to sail to our destination of Shambhala, we helped many souls on board our boat. These were the souls that were open to seeing the light, but they just didn't know where to begin or how to go about it. After this meditation, an amazing thing happened. Maria Paz, who was present during the meditation, sent a few images she had appreciated from a wonderful mystic and artist, Nicholas Roerich. This image is a perfect depiction of my vision. We are each to be a beacon of hope, inspiring others to remember who they truly are, ascending masters of light. As we look around the boat, we become aware there are many individuations of the divine, each representing a beautiful facet of a multidimensional diamond. Ruth is glowing as the unification is taking place, bringing in all her different aspects of self into singularity. Swale is transforming her body and creating matter within matter. Marianne realizes together, all of our energies affect the all that is. Ginger is seen in her Merkaba, reflecting the ideas we are studying and embodying. Beth is a way shower, realizing how we interact sets an example which then fractals and carries far beyond our group, like diamonds on the water. Sharon looks up to the stars in the night sky, seeing all the potentials that exist. And Kathy, I stand in my divinity, sovereignty, knowing the innermost wisdom resides within. Patricia, Andy, and their group share this wonderful gift. As I was telling Patricia about my vision, she came through with a luminous gyroscope, reminding us this is a device used for measuring or maintaining orientation and angular velocity. It is a spinning wheel or disc in which the axis of rotation is free to assume any rotation by itself. When rotating, the orientation of this axis is unaffected by tilting or rotation of the mounting. In conclusion, together, remaining stable, focused, and steadfast, as the ascending masters of light, we create a wave of positivity. With ease and grace, we allow our mission to be realized. We are each the creator of light, paving a clear path to embody self-realization in the oneness of all that is. And the last thing that they wanted me to bring forth is the sense of humor. And they said, if you ever feel off kilter, we are reminded of our purpose with their sweet little ditty. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. Thank you and blessings.
When they finished, Ella stands up and says, thank you, beloved family. I have gained much knowledge about quantum singularity. Yes, Hasei also thanks the members and states that he has still much to integrate. Both Ella and Es Hasei understand that their journeys will continue and they will grow in their embodiment of all the information they just received. When they turn towards the direction that they had entered the room, they see the towering door. They walk towards the door. As Ella turns to say thank you again to the members, she sees their images quickly fading until they vanish. Both walk through the door, finding themselves back in the vibrant color clearing. In simultaneous time, Ula and Uesa walk cautiously through the towering door. They look around, quickly noticing that the door has disappeared. They gaze upon what seems to be a magnificent island with trees, plants, and mountains, all also vibrating with colors they have never seen before. They look around and marvel at the beauty and grandeur of what they see. They feel the beating heart of every blade of grass, every tree and limb, every flower. It's like a symphony being played by a 1,000-piece orchestra in perfect harmony. The grass under their feet begins to vibrate in a different frequency as they begin to walk in this frequency towards an enormous mountain, so immense they are unable to see the top. The mountain that resembles a pyramid seems to grow in width and height the closer they get. A door appears. Ula and Uesa walk through and see a banner floating in the air that reads, "Welcome to the School of Divine Design." All around them are triangular shapes that seem to extend in all directions, even underneath their feet. "Hello, beloveds. We have been expecting you. Please follow me." As this figure speaks to them telepathically, they follow this being through numerous triangular-shaped passageways until they reach a triangular doorway. On it is the word fractals in shimmering white letters. The figure gestures Ula and Uesa to walk through the doorway, and they find themselves in a triangular room with two translucent chairs and a projection screen in front of the room. The figure telepathically asks them to sit down. To their surprise, Ula and Uesa see members of the Ascending Masters community magically appear in front of them. It is Kelly that comes forth to speak.
"Hello all. I'm here to talk about fractals. With the help of large IBM mainframe computers, Benoit Mandelbrot brought fractal theory to life in the mid-1970s. He discovered how to use computer graphics to study complex systems using iterative math functions. Before computers, iteration was done by hand, making it nearly impossible for complex patterns to emerge. Fractal theory quickly expanded and became a window into dynamic systems, allowing scientists to model mountain ranges, the human brain, or even the stock market. Prior to fractal geometry, systems was Euclidean geometry and algebra. But the simplicity of circles, triangles, and squares was insufficient for modeling chaotic, complex, dynamical systems. Okay, but what is a fractal? The prominent definition is that fractals are infinitely complex patterns that are self-similar across different scales. The four common fractal features are infinite intricacy, zoom symmetry, complexity from simplicity, and fractal dimensions. The field of complexity theory is explained using chaos theory and fractal geometry, which implies that from chaotic fractal systems, more complex systems emerge. Remember, a fractal is self-similar, repeating complex pattern. Expanding on this concept, I would suggest that humans are repeating complex patterns that are self-similar to God, embodying the infinite and the finite simultaneously. As a fractal of divine source, we are created in the image and similitude of God." And now Colleen will continue our discussion on fractals.
Thank you, Kelly. The English word fractal comes from the Latin word fractus, which means broken or fractured. There are three kinds of fractals: the Mandelbrot set, which is the one we're discussing today, the Sierpinski gasket, which begins with a single triangle and adds more to it. And with each iteration, you start to remove the center of the triangle. And with each repetition, you see more and more of the triangle become empty space. The von Cook snowflake takes the opposite approach to the Sierpinski gasket. Instead of subtracting triangle material, more triangles are added. Each side of the triangle has a proportional triangle added to the side. Each side has another triangle added, and the pattern repeats infinitely. After a number of iterations, you can zoom in on a section of the pattern and see the self-similarity between the edges. We see this in sacred geometry with the tetrahedron, and more specifically, the star tetrahedron and the Merkaba. Shapes that display inherent and repeating similarities are the main requirement for being classified as a fractal. Every part looks similar to the image. We see this in sacred geometry's flower of life, and they are also extremely familiar to us because nature is full of fractals and is why we are compelled to spend more time in nature to feel its calming effect. Chaos theory is also part of fractals. The Fractal Foundation says that chaos is a science of surprises, of the nonlinear, the unpredictable, and where most of traditional science deals with supposedly predictable phenomena like gravity, electricity, or chemical reactions. To recognize the chaotic fractal nature of our world gives us new insight, power, and wisdom. By understanding that our ecosystems, our social systems, and our economic systems are interconnected, can we hope to avoid actions which may end up being detrimental to our long-term well-being? Richard Taylor was a physicist and art enthusiast. In the early 1970s, he had a special interest in Jackson Pollock's poured art and found the pictures to be fractal. His most famous work is a painting called Convergence, a collage of colors splattered on a canvas that created masterful shapes and lines that evoked emotions and attacked the eye. It was created in 1952, 25 years ahead of fractal discovery by Benoit Mandelbrot. Taylor discovered that the pupils in our eyes use a search pattern that is itself fractal. Our visual system is wired to understand fractals, and stress reduction is triggered by a physiological resonance that occurs when the fractal structure of the eye matches the fractal image being viewed. Gunther Schumann is from Austria and studied mathematics at Cambridge University in England in the early 1970s, before fractal mathematics was discovered. He later found that geometrically, fractals exist in between our familiar dimensions. There are two important principles of the fractals themselves. The first is self-similarity. You start in the whole design and then keep magnifying. You can see this from the spiral in the galaxy to our own DNA spiral in our body. As above, so below. This comes from ancient knowledge, ancient wisdom that we have forgotten as we went through our technical and material society. The second important principle of fractals is that everything is connected with everything. Nothing separate exists. Separation is an illusion we have to overcome. Gunther has studied crop circles for the last 20 years. He has even led groups of people to England to study them. Simple crop circles appeared with the Mandelbrot set in the 1970s. Crop circles are placed on special occasions and they are interconnected. The phenomenon of beautiful fractals and crop circles were created by our cosmic friends with hidden knowledge given in cosmic humorous ways for people with eyes to see and to wake up the rest of the people. As part of my research, I wanted to experience being in a fractal. I found one on YouTube called The Hardest Trip, a Mandelbrot fractal, that I thought was pleasing and began my mystical journey. I experienced no time as I allowed myself to be drawn deep within the fractal. I also noticed a feeling of calm and peacefulness as all stress in my body was dissolving. As I reached the bottom of the fractal, I noticed it was folding into itself, creating self-similar replications of itself. I saw it as a journey into God's source and how we were created as self-similar to God. We are all God also. As this journey ended, another began into chaos, bright colored pieces flying around chaotically. As I watched, the pieces began to slow down into ordered chaos. They began to connect to each other in a pleasing way, to create more order, which I recognize as change. It is what happens when any change comes about, whether within ourselves or on our planet. We can see this right now on the news and in ourselves. Soon there will be no more chaos. Only peace will be within and around us. You may be already noticing it. I hope you will all take your own journey into a fractal, and perhaps you too will touch the face of God. I'm so grateful to all who have made this possible. Thank you. And now I am pleased to introduce Jody.
Hello, family. It is my honor to speak on behalf of a few of our family members. These thoughts are from Judith. A fractal is a never-ending pattern created by repeating a simple process over and over. We are surrounded by fractals. They are inside us. Many of our internal organs and structures display fractal properties. Our brains are full of fractals. In fact, they couldn't function if not for fractal geometry. The human brain comprises approximately 100 billion neurons, the part of a human that detaches from the body after death, which is separated from influence, body, genes, and evolution to the soulless fractal. Fractals are spiritual because they are the explanation of humans' universal and innate subconscious understanding of the world. Thank you, Judith. Sharka's thoughts are these. Chaos explores the transition between order and disorder, and a fractal is a never-ending pattern which rises from chaos. My conclusion is that the fractal is a mechanism which promotes growth. Because we are all the fractal of the Creator, the urge to keep ascending is inheritably in us. We all progress in our own way according to our choices. We can purposefully choose to align our mind with the mind of our Creator and speed up our ascension by avoiding creating miscreations. The rest of my discovery is some fractal patterns in nature are based on a Fibonacci sequence. The Fibonacci sequence is a part of sacred science. The purpose of sacred science is to connect heaven with earth. We have been taught that elementals create shapes and forms in nature according to our thoughts. Only the thoughts aligned with the Creator create useful creations, and those thoughts which are not aligned with the Creator produce creations which are not useful to all. The fractal pattern, which is based on the Fibonacci sequence and therefore based on the golden ratio, is producing a useful or healing form in nature and or growing consciousness. This can speed up the ascension. Thank you, Sharka. Becky's thoughts are that fractals are solutions that nature has come up with through natural selection to optimize how things grow and proliferate. We see them replicating everywhere in our human body, in the shape and formation of all of our organs. We see it in a growth of a human life from conception to embryo, to fetus, to baby, to child, to adolescence, to adulthood. From DNA to cells and all systems, there is a rhythmic dance that folds back into itself again and again to replicate and scale the evolution of life from birth to death. The dance ebbs and flows from the unmanifest creative intelligence in the unified field through multiple permeations and transformations until it metamorphoses into our manifest universe as matter and the infinite expression of creation that we experience around us. Fractals help to make the invisible visible through their self-replicating patterns. There is an economy and perfection that only the divine can create. From perfection and grace emerges what appears to be chaos or disorder, only to see it reemerge again, perfect order that follows a precise pattern and blueprint. Soul fractals can be created through ruptures of the soul caused by traumatic events. As our souls are eternal, painful events are not an exclusivity of modern times. They carry dozens, if not hundreds, of painful experiences that deems to threaten the very existence of their human vessel. Traumatic events that are so painful to the physical existence, physical or emotional, causes the soul to fragment itself in an attempt to preserve its light or to send part of the pain away. Like a sinking ship, the soul is able to save part of its essence by creating lifeboats and sending them away. The purpose, one could ask, is to minimize the damage. Thank you, Becky. And for my experience, I have chosen not to go into mental interpretation of other people's research. Rather, I went inward to my own intuition and personal experience with fractals. So I would like to share my personal experience. I have had the wonderful opportunity to experience ceremonies using a DMT-based plant medicine. As we understand, the pineal gland is responsible for secreting DMT upon the death of our bodies. So this is my connection and my experience. What I experience at the onset of one of these journeys is always consistent and begins with a very loud internal audio sound, followed by a very powerful vibration that immediately triggers an incredible inner vision of fractalizing geometry. The fractals spin until I'm no longer aware of them as I feel jettisoned in my body. The remainder of the journey goes out into the ethers somewhere different each time. Since I've worked with a shaman friend of mine, I asked her about the fractals. She shared that the fractalization in the geometries is very consistent and experienced by most people as we are exiting out of this reality. To me, this understanding and a new analytical awareness of fractals is showing me the bridge between dimensions of consciousness. Therefore, my conclusion is we are all a fractal of source, organizing on this plane of physical existence, coming out of pure energy, some can call it chaos, into an organizing designated form of fractalizing patterns or bodies. Thank you, family. And now I'm introducing Vera.
Hello, everybody. I'm sorry if it will be some additional noises today. I'm in a very unusual area. First of all, even if it's maybe inappropriate, but I want to just say how I feel blessed and privileged to be a part of this profound project. I'm deeply touched by each amazing, interesting, informative, and thought-through presentations. An immense gratitude to each participant. And special thanks, of course, for Diana, who is an absolutely super organizer, ideal and exceptional organizer. Appreciations come from the bottom of my heart and my soul. So my topic is fractals. So fractals, not to be repeated for that very amazing presentation before me. I just summarize what I could do. That they're building blocks of the whole reality. Fractals are structural with non-random trajectory, not as a Brownian motion, which is chaotic, with random trajectory. When you think about fractals, there is always geometry, tree, leaf, organ, snowflakes, and all examples that were presented here. They can be one fractal replicating multiple times, or can be combination of fractals that repeated either way, to the larger, to the smaller. Replication is usually cascading and goes directly to the largest infinity or the smallest infinity. Object of fractals is multidimensional. So about the second question and scientific approach for that, quantum field is the rigorous science of the present. Science of fractals has begun a preliminary approach not long time ago, as we learn. All studies depend on the human theories and conclusions. which at present time are not completely understood. The mathematics is reliable, but does not explain the use of fractals. The academic have more information, but also doesn't understand completely or know how to use the fractals, therefore unreliable. Some ancient who were taught from beyond are reliable if using the original ancient text. Buddhism is the most reliable if they use their original writings. But the public, including scientists, academics, and other religious, just not allowed to do that. So we are attempting to create the rightful reality. Much of reality in the area of fractals has been altered and misused. We are learning how to construct and place them within the certain area of reality that we can do now to reverse the damage. Each individual will use and combine their personal ability for greater understanding and proper application of fractals. How it could be transferred to the group? The transfer to our group at large is done whenever one or more members convey information in whatever form they choose. And why it is important to our group? We have come here together as a group to perform certain tasks. Therefore, every member of our group must know what every other member knows in order to be a cohesive whole. And now I will give the time our Diana to continue. Thank you so much.
As we are a unified group, I bring forth an aspect of the soul spirit of Heidi through her words. Fractals are or have been beyond our thinking. There are many things beyond our current thinking. They just pop up when least expected or when we need to know them. They have order, beauty, and intelligence. As we investigate our spirituality, everything has order, beauty, and intelligence. We are a small part of the whole, and we reflect the whole. No matter what we are doing, it has order, beauty, and intelligence. I see the trees. Now I am seeing more of the forest. And also from Imhotep, who brings forth this beautiful information about how truly ancient the understanding of fractals are.
Now, in the 1980s, I happened to notice that if you look at an aerial photograph of an African village, you see fractals. And I thought, this is fabulous. I wonder why. And of course, I had to go to Africa and ask folks why. So I got a Fulbright scholarship to just travel around Africa for a year asking people why they were building fractals, which is a great job if you can get it. And so I finally got to this city, and I'd done a little fractal model for the city just to see how it would sort of unfold. But when I got there, I got to this palace of the chief, and my French is not very good. I said something like, I'm a mathematician, and I would like to stand on your roof. But he was really cool about it. He took me up there, and we talked about fractals. And he said, oh, yeah, we know a rectangle within a rectangle within a rectangle. We know all about that. And it turns out the royal insignia has a rectangle within a rectangle within a rectangle. And the path through that palace is actually this spiral here. And as you go through the paths, you have to get more and more polite. So they're mapping the social scaling onto the geometric scale. It's a conscious pattern. It is not unconscious like a termite mound fractal. This is a village in southern Zambia. The Baila built this village about 400 meters in diameter. You have a huge ring. The rings that represent the family enclosures get larger and larger as you go towards the back. And then you have the chief's ring here towards the back, and then the chief's immediate family in that ring. So here's a little fractal model for it. Here's one house with a sacred altar. Here's the house of houses, the family enclosure, with the humans here where the sacred altar would be. And then here's the village as a whole, a ring of rings, with the chief's extended family here, the chief's immediate family here. And then here, there's a tiny village, only this big. Now you might wonder, how can people fit in a tiny village only this big? That's because they're spirit people. It's the ancestors. And of course, the spirit people have a little miniature village in their village, right? So it's just like George Cantor said, the recursion continues forever. This is in the Mandara Mountains near the Nigerian border in Cameroon, Mukulek. I saw this diagram drawn by a French architect, and I thought, wow, what a beautiful fractal. So I tried to come up with a seed shape, which upon iteration would unfold into this thing. I came up with this structure here. Let's see, first iteration, second, third, fourth. Now, after I did the simulation, I realized the whole village kind of spirals around just like this. And here's that replicating line, self-replicating line that unfolds into the fractal. Well, I noticed that line is about where the only square building in the village is at. So when I got to the village, I said, can you take me to the square building? I think, you know, something's going on there. And they said, well, we can take you there, but you can't go inside because that's the sacred altar where we do sacrifices every year to keep up those annual cycles of fertility from the field. And I started to realize that the cycles of fertility were just like the recursive cycles in the geometric algorithm that builds this. And the recursion in some of these villages continues down to very tiny scale. So here's a Nankani village in Mali. And you can see you go inside the family enclosure. You go inside, and here's pots in the fireplace stacked recursively. Here's the calabashes that Issa was just showing us, and they're stacked recursively. Now, the tiniest calabash in here keeps the woman's soul. And when she dies, they have a ceremony where they break this stack called the Zalanga, and her soul goes off to eternity once again. Infinity is important. Now, you might ask yourself three questions at this point. Aren't these scaling patterns just universal to all indigenous architecture? And that was actually my original hypothesis. When I first saw those African fractals, I thought, wow, so any indigenous group that doesn't have a state society that's in a hierarchy must have a kind of bottom-up architecture. But that turns out not to be true. I started collecting aerial photographs of Native American, South Pacific architecture. Only the African ones were fractal. And if you think about it, all these different societies have different geometric design themes that they use. So Native Americans use a combination of circular symmetry and fourfold symmetry. And you can see them in the pottery and the baskets. Here's an aerial photograph of one of the Anasazi ruins. You can see it's circular at the largest scale, but it's rectangular at the smaller scale, right? It is not the same pattern at two different scales. Second, you might ask, well, Dr. Eglash, aren't you ignoring the diversity of African cultures? And three times the answer is no. First of all, I agree with Mudimbe's wonderful book, The Invention of Africa, that Africa is an artificial invention of first colonialism and then oppositional movements. No, because a widely shared design practice doesn't necessarily give you a unity of culture, and it definitely is not in the DNA. And finally, the fractals have self-similarity. So they're similar to themselves, but they're not necessarily similar to each other. You see very different uses for fractals. It's a shared technology in Africa. And finally, well, isn't this just intuition? It's not really mathematical knowledge. Africans can't possibly really be using fractal geometry, right? It wasn't invented until the 1970s. Well, it's true that some African fractals are, as far as I'm concerned, just pure intuition. So some of these things, you know, I would wander around the streets of Dakar asking people, well, what's the algorithm? What's the rules for making this? And they'd say, well, you know, we just make it that way because it looks pretty stupid. But sometimes that's not the case. In some cases, there would actually be algorithms and very sophisticated algorithms. So in Mengwetu sculpture, you see this recursive geometry. In Ethiopian crosses, you see this wonderful unfolding of the shape. In Angola, the Chokwe people draw lines in the sand, and it's what German mathematician Euler called a graph. We now call it an Eulerian path. You can never lift your stylus from the surface, and you can never go over the same line twice. But they do it recursively, and they do it with an age grade system. So the little kids learn this one, And then the older kids learn this one. And then the next age grade initiation, you learn this one. And with each iteration of that algorithm, you learn the iterations of the myth. You learn the next level of knowledge. And finally, all over Africa, you see this board game. It's called Awori in Ghana, where I studied it. It's called Moncala here on the East Coast, Bao in Kenya, Sogo elsewhere. Well, you see self-organizing patterns that spontaneously occur in this board game. And the folks in Ghana knew about these self-organizing patterns and would use them strategically. So this is very conscious knowledge. Here's a wonderful fractal. Anywhere you go in the Sahel, you'll see this windscreen. And of course, fences around the world are all Cartesian, all strictly linear. But here in Africa, you've got these nonlinear scaling fences. So I tracked down one of the folks who makes these things, this guy in Mali, just outside of Bamako. And I asked him, how come you're making fractal fences? Because nobody else is. And his answer was very interesting. He said, well, if I lived in the jungle, I would only use the long rows of straw because they're very quick and they're very cheap. Doesn't take much time, doesn't take much straw. He said, but wind and dust goes through pretty easily. Now, the tight rows up at the very top, they really hold out the wind and dust, but it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of straw because they're really, really tight. Now, he said, we know from experience that the farther up from the ground you go, the stronger the wind blows, right? It's just like a cost-benefit analysis. And I measured out the lengths of straw, put in a log-log plot, got the scaling exponent, and it almost exactly matches the scaling exponent for the relationship between wind speed and height in the wind engineering handbook. So these guys are right on target for a practical use of scaling technology. The most complex example of an algorithmic approach to fractals that I found was actually not in geometry. It was in a symbolic code. And this was Bamana sand divination. And the same divination system is found all over Africa. You can find it on the East Coast as well as the West Coast. And often the symbols are very well preserved. Each of these symbols has 4 bits. It's a 4-bit binary word. You draw these lines in the sand randomly, and then you count off. And if it's an odd number, you put down 1 stroke. And if it's an even number, you put down 2 stroke. And they did this very rapidly. And I couldn't understand where they were getting. They only did the randomness 4 times. I couldn't understand where they were getting the other 12 symbols. And they wouldn't tell me. They said, no, I can't tell you about this. I said, well, look, I'll pay you. You can be my teacher and I'll come each day and pay you. I said, it's not a matter of money. You know, this is a religious matter. And finally, out of desperation, I said, well, let me explain George Cantor in 1877. And I started explaining, why I was there in Africa. And they got very excited when they saw the Cantor set. And one of them said, come here, I think I can help you out here. And so he took me through the initiation ritual for a Bamana priest. And of course, I was only interested in the math. So the whole time he kept shaking his head going, I didn't learn it this way. But I had to sleep with a kola nut next to my bed, buried in sand, and give 7 coins to 7 lepers and so on. And finally, he revealed the truth of the matter. And it turns out it's a pseudo-random number generator. They're using deterministic chaos. When you have a 4-bit symbol, you then put it together with another one sideways. So even plus odd gives you odd. Odd plus even gives you odd. Even plus even gives you even. Odd plus odd gives you even. It's addition modulo 2, just like in the parity bit check on your computer. And then you take this symbol and you put it back in. So it's a self-generating diversity of symbols. They're truly using a kind of deterministic chaos in doing this. Now, because it's a binary code, you can actually implement this in hardware. What a fantastic teaching tool that should be in African engineering schools. And the most interesting thing I found out about it was historical. In the 12th century, Hugo of Santalia brought it from Islamic mystics into Spain. And there it entered into the alchemy community as geomancy, the divination through the earth. This is a geomantic chart drawn by for King Richard II in 1390. Leibniz, the German mathematician, talked about geomancy in his dissertation called De Combinatoria. And he said, well, instead of using 1 stroke and 2 strokes, let's use a 1 and a 0. And we can count by powers of 2, right? Ones and zeros, the binary code. George Boole took Leibniz's binary code and created Boolean algebra, and John von Neumann took Boolean algebra and created the digital computer. So all these little PDAs and laptops, every digital circuit in the world started in Africa. And I know Brian Eno says there's not enough African computers, but I don't think there's enough African history in Brian Eno.
Imhotep also says the highest representation is. It is a fraction within the whole, but the fraction has the whole within it. You can see within the flower of life lies the seed of life and the tree of life. Just like Metatron's cube, it has all five of the sacred shapes. Within the highest representation of that, you find your perfection within your imperfection. You are a fractal of God. And Chakra recognized that her beautiful rendition that she used for our conference, she indicates, I use sacred geometry, golden ratio, in constructing the composition of the painting. And now, after learning about fractals, I am realizing that it is what is considered fractal art. Beautiful, Chakra. And now, the beautiful soul of Rosemary comes forth.
Thank you, Diana. I would like to share an experience that I had back in the days of mastering alchemy. There was an exercise that Jim Self used to lead us through, in which we started to meditate on a piece of wood, and then we would focus on a cell, and then go into the cell, and then into the molecule. And from the molecule, we went into the atom. I'm sure many of you have done this meditation. What my experience was, is that when we reached the atomic and subatomic level, I noticed that the gravity totally disappeared and I was floating. I would float in this vast space, which now I would call the quantum field. But at the time, I didn't have the words for it. After a time of floating, I would notice that in the vastness of the space all around me, there were distant stars. And as I continued on my journey back to my body, I noticed that I was zooming through the universe. I could see that I was in the Milky Way, approaching our solar system, and then back into Earth and into my body. In this experience, I saw that the infinitesimally small and the infinitesimally large were the same thing. And I noticed the fractal nature of form, of all form, of everything. So now, when I first sat down to meditate for this project, the words immediately came to me, I am a fractal of source. And I understood, we are all fractals of source. Thank you.
When they finish, Ula stands up and says, I am in great gratitude for this information that I have received. My heart is in joy. Uessa also gives thanks and states that he will meditate to help him assimilate what he has just learned. Both Ula and Uessa understand that their journeys will continue and they will grow in their embodiment of all the information they just received. When they turn towards the direction that they had entered the room, they see the towering door. They walk towards the door. As Uessa turns to say thank you again to the members, he sees their images quickly fading until they disappear. Both walk through the door, finding themselves back in the vibrant colored clearing. Ella, Yesa Se, Ula, and Uessa find themselves back in the clearing. As they walk towards the illumined bench, the doors disappear. They share with one another what they have learned. All are excited, for they know that this information must be integrated in the coherency with all that they have previously learned from the council. They each walk away from the clearing through separate pathways, Ella opens her eyes. She remembers everything, and she smiles to herself, instinctively knowing that the others had the same experience. She quietly says, "Thank you," to the council. Ella then hears, "Now ponder about the connection between the quantum field, quantum entanglement, quantum singularity, and fractals. For this too, my beloved, is important." Marianne had started doing just that, and she brought forth her interpretation of the beautiful prayer that we received last year. And she says, "I am light, unified field. I am the light of the Creator, quantum singularity, created in the image and similitude of my Creator, fractal. I am a creator that creates form within form, quantum entanglement." Rosemary.
As I was contemplating all of these ideas, I had some thoughts that bringing together the concepts of the quantum field, quantum entanglement, singularity, and fractals, we get a description of reality that is far more complex, more malleable, and responsive to consciousness than the description that we were brought up with. This is a scientific explanation that supports the concepts of our spiritual teachings. We can see that ideas such as conscious co-creation and manifestation are not woo-woo or magical at all, but rather the outcome of a step-by-step process that can be repeated again and again. It makes me realize that there is so much more to know and learn, and I am in gratitude for all that we have been shown.
We are being shown the way, and in turn, we are being the way-showers. It is with great gratitude and humility that we thank the Council for their divine wisdom and divine light in guiding our journey home, and for Joan, John, and Milena for being the conduits for this divine wisdom, this divine light. There is no doubt that we are the image and similitude of Source. This project has shown us the why. The how is our journey home, using what we have learned as a basic foundation for being home, for being the all, in our own unique, divine way. Blessings and thank you. This ends our presentation.
Thank you, Deanna, and every member of your community that has researched and come together in a presentation that was a magnificent presentation. And the way in which you drew it together in the end was perfect, as a perfect representative of this journey that we are on together as a collective consciousness and a co-participant in the Council of 12. So, in closing, I don't want to disrupt this wonderful energy, but we have a few announcements. First of all, Katie is Catriano, excuse me, is working on this transcripts, and it would be so helpful to her if those of you that presented last time and haven't yet sent your transcripts that you used in that presentation, that if you would send them, and those that presented this time, if you would send those to Catriona, it would hasten the process. And she has said that in this way, not only are you part of this magnificent collective consciousness of the group, but you put your own individuality, master individuality, in the energies of what you have co-created here today. So I ask you that you just pay a little attention, take a little time. If you haven't sent it, and of course this time you haven't sent it yet, if you do that, it would be so helpful to get these transcripts up there in a much quicker fashion.
Joan, can I just say a little bit?
Sure.
For those in my group, why don't you send it to me?
Okay.
And I will put it in the order of the presentation, so it will be easier for Catriona to make the transcripts.
Oh, thank you so much, Deanna. That's a magnificent thing that you're doing here. Thanks.
Yeah, and this is Catriona. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Joan, for mentioning this, and Deanna for that very generous offer. Joan, you presented beautifully my reasons for this. I'd like to say just a little more to both groups here. In listening to each presentation, I was blown away by the power of the individual streams of consciousness that everyone was presenting and emanating, just like our teacher said we would be speaking from our own individual streams of consciousness. And so I found in starting to work with this that if I just took what you had actually produced and copied it and compiled it, that maintains the beauty of what you guys have done, rather than having me put my formatting, my energetics into it. So that's why I'm requesting that we do it this way. And I very much would appreciate it if you could send it to me. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Catriona. Milena?
First off, what another fantastic presentation. So you did an outstanding, excellent job. Both of these groups together, I mean, have been just beyond any expectation that I had. So kudos again to every single one of you. Beautiful, beautiful job. Your mastery of everyone in group one and two has just come through in flying colors. So thank you for that. The only other thing we want to say, if any questions have come up for anyone through either last week's presentation or today's, do write them down. Next week, we will gather again for session three, which will be April 2nd. And we will have a discussion and Q&A about these two segments. So write your questions down, and we will see if we can have them addressed then.
Okay. Well, with that, I think we will close this session. Thank you all for being part of it. Blessings.
Blessings, everyone.
Blessings. Thank you.
Blessings. Thank you.
Thank you.
Blessings.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.